shopping. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I believe we should not attempt to break the blockade. Not yet.
A chorus of surprised voices filled the room, protesting, some courteously, some angrily. Varian lifted his hands.
"Hear me out," he said,
raising his voice slightly to be heard above the din, but not quite shouting. The others fell silent, looking unhappy. He continued.
"Wisdom would dictate that we do as Brohl and Gen suggested. Misdirect the Horde to think we are attacking the blockade at Feathermoon Stronghold, and then target Darkshore. Break the blockade, liberate the trapped elven fleet, then go on from there with more ships and soldiers."
"Wisdom would,"
said Druken in agreement, disgruntled.
"I think instead we let slip our plan to attack Darkshore, not Feathermoon Stronghold. It'll be all the more readily believed, since we've already put out a false trail. Garrosh will order the bulk of his navy there. We, meanwhile, sail directly toward Orgrimmar. Attack Garrosh in his own capital. I have spies as well, Gen, and they tell me that not all are happy with Hellscream as their leader. It is hard for me to believe, but there are some Horde who are as appalled at what happened in Theramore as we are. We take Garrosh and occupy the city. Chaos will erupt, and with any luck, the discontented among the Horde will see this as their moment to rise up. If not, then we still have disarray and hold their capital city."
"Our people suffer, Varian," said Brohl quietly.
Varian softened.
"I know, my friend," he said, "but this is a chance to cut the head off the beast. Regardless, the Horde ships will leave Darkshore and come to the aid of Orgrimmar."
"It sounds like madness," said Gen,
growling a little and looking at Varian with narrowed eyes.
"But the audacity and unexpectedness of it, it just might work."
"It will save time as well," said Talun. "It is faster to reach Orgrimmar than Darkshore."
Varian looked around. A few still seemed unhappy, but no one was protesting anymore. He hoped that he was right. If Garrosh found out what was being planned, or if for some other reason this attack failed, then he would lose nearly the whole of the Alliance fleet. All that would be left would be the elven ships, still trapped in Darkshore and elsewhere. But he couldn't shake the sense of rightness he had about it. And that was what made a king. The willingness to make decisions and bear the responsibility for either success or failure. The ships in the harbor were finally ready. More had come to join them, exquisite elven and Draenei vessels that had, fortunately, been traveling elsewhere when the blockade had been enacted, no less formidable for their grace and beauty than the more practical human, dwarf, and gnome-crafted ships. The cluster of proud vessels filled the harbor to overflowing and seemed to reach all the way to the horizon. The docks were thronged with citizens. Most of them were from Stormwind itself, but many others had traveled to participate in this historic occasion. It was a sea of living beings next to the sea itself, Varian thought, and wondered how many of those gathered to see their loved ones off would have the joy of welcoming them home safely. The weather could not have cooperated more fully. It was a bright day, with blue skies and sufficient wind to harness, but not enough to make the sea rough. A band played cheerfully, inspirational martial music, and traditional anthems of each country and race to remind everyone that they belonged. For all the air of celebration, as he scanned the faces in the crowd, Varian saw that there were somber expressions, even tears. This was war, not a mere skirmish with a soldier's back for supper. He had planned for it as best he could, and was going himself to lead the troops, although his nobles had tried to convince him to remain. He could not send men and women off to face death without standing shoulder to shoulder with them. And when he walked out to the third tier of the harbor, beneath the great statue of the Lion of Stormwind, the gathered populace cheered. For they knew he was one of them. He lifted his arms as he marched out, with Brawl, Greymane, Mechatork, Talun, and the three Ironforge dwarves accompanying him. Banners of all colors were waved, and the crowd roared. Varian lowered his arms, calling for silence.
"Citizens of the Alliance," he said,
his voice carrying to the eager listeners.
"Only a handful of days ago, the Horde perpetrated an act of villainy, so calculated, so heinous, that it could only be answered by a call to war. And you have answered. You stand before me, ready to fight and die if need be, in order to preserve what is decent and good in this world. It is the Horde who started this war, not we. But by the light, we will finish it."
The crowd roared. Tears glinted on faces, but those faces were smiling.
"The attack on Theramore cannot even properly be described. There are opponents, and there are enemies. There are civilized beings, and there are monsters. There was a time when I made no such distinction. But being able to now makes our path even clearer and more righteous. By choosing to detonate a mana bomb over a populous city, an abominable act of utter cowardice, Garrosh Hellscream has clearly demonstrated what he is. And as he and those who follow him have chosen to be monsters, we will treat them thus."
He continued,
"We will never retaliate in kind, for we choose differently, but we will fight. We will stop them so they cannot continue their methodical conquest. We will embody all the Alliance stands for, and we will do so united. I stand here, not alone today, but with King Ghen Greymane. His people have turned a curse into a gift. The Worgen will battle with greater hearts than you have ever seen, proving that they, unlike our foes, are not monsters. Without the aid of our dwarven and gnomish brothers and sisters, these glorious vessels could never have been built in time to save the rest of Kalimdor from falling to the Horde. The Kaldori, long our allies and to whose aid we go, already have many ships waiting to join us as they fight to free themselves. And the Draenei, who have been as sure a compass of righteousness as any that could be imagined since their arrival in our world, stand here, ready to spill their blood for others."
He stepped back and spread his hands, indicating that the crowd should show its appreciation. His own could not have been more sincere. Never had Varian been more appreciative of both true friends and level heads. For long, long minutes, there was no sound but the cheering of grateful people. Varian resumed his position.
"As is common knowledge, I will be with our brave Marines as we depart today. I leave behind one who is worthy to lead you, if need be. One who was already led before."
Varian nodded. Anduin, who had been standing off to the side behind one of the massive cannons until he was called, stepped forward. The prince was dressed in the blue and yellow colors of the Alliance, a simple silver circlet atop his golden head, and was flanked by two Draenei paladins, resplendent in their glowing armor. And although he was much smaller than they, he was the one all eyes focused on. He was greeted by cheers and applause, and blushed a little. He was not used to public appearances. He lifted his arms, encouraging the crowd to quiet, and began to speak.
"I fear I will never be one to send off men and women into battle with joy," he said. "Even though there could scarcely be a more just reason for doing so. The Horde has acted against us in a manner too terrible to ignore. All who believe in justice and decency must take a stand against the horrors of Theramore."
Varian, listening intently, recalled how the aftermath had been described, how it had turned Jaina from a rational, compassionate woman into someone who wanted, nay, hungered for, violence and revenge.
"If we do not act now, if these brave soldiers and sailors of the Alliance do not set forth now, then we condone what was done. We encourage, even invite, more violence, more slaughter of the innocent. Garrosh Hellscream has said bluntly that he wishes to drive out the Alliance from the entire continent of Kalimdor. We cannot meekly accept this. There comes a time when even the kindest heart must say, "No, enough." And that time has come.
He lifted his hands and closed his eyes.
And to prove the rightness of what we do, the purity of the purpose for which this fleet now sets sail, I call upon the blessed light to touch all who would sacrifice to protect the innocent.
A soft light began to glow around his raised hands. It moved to envelop his body and then rose to hover above the crowd, showering down upon those who were prepared to fight and those who loved them.
I pray that your weapons be guided by the justness of what you do. I urge you to remember, as you go into the heat of battle, to refuse to allow hate entrance into your heart. Keep it a sanctuary, a temple to the memory of those so tragically slain. Remember at each moment you are fighting for justice, not genocide. Victory, not vengeance. And I know with all my being that if you go into battle with these things so firmly in your heart that no anger, no pain can shake them, we will triumph. Blessings on you, soldiers of the Alliance.
Varian felt the light brush him almost like a physical thing. It seemed to caress him, to enter his heart, as Anduin had said. He felt calmer, stronger, more peaceful. He watched his boy speak with a pure passion of his soul, watched how swiftly and sweetly the light came to bless him, saw how the people loved him.
"Oh, my son, you are already the best of all of us. What a king you will make."
A horn sounded. It was time to embark. Everywhere were families making their farewells. Older couples with grown children, fresh-faced youths saying goodbye to sweethearts. Then the milling throngs moved slowly toward the vessels. Handkerchiefs waved, kisses were blown. Varian waited and smiled a little as Anduin, flanked by his two paladin friends, moved toward the flagship.
"You spoke well, son," Varian said.
"I'm glad you think so," Anduin replied. "I spoke only what was in my heart."
Varian placed a hand on the youth's shoulder.
"What was in your heart was perfect. I was and am very proud of you, Anduin."
An impish grin lit up the prince's face.
"You don't think I'm a mewling pacifist anymore?"
"Ah, that's not fair," Varian said. "And no, I don't. I'm glad you realized the necessity of what we have to do."
Anduin sobered.
"I do," he said. "I wish it were otherwise, but it's not possible. I'm just glad you're not like Jaina is. I've prayed for her, too."
Of course he had.
"Anduin, this war we both think we have to fight. You know I might not come back."
He nodded. "I know, father."
"And if I don't, you are more than ready to take my place. I'm proud of you. I know you'll rule well and justly. Stormwind could not be in better hands."
Anduin's eyes grew shiny.
"Father, I... thank you. I would do my very best to be a good king, but I'd just as soon not be for a very long time."
"Me too," said Varian.
He pulled the boy into a tight, awkward embrace, pressed his forehead down to Anduin's, then turned and lightly ran down to the ships. He merged with a flood of sailors and headed to the flagship and to war. Chapter 24. Kallik flew with a heavy heart. He was terribly afraid that Kirigosa had been right about Jaina. Dragons did not have the ability to read minds, but Jaina's attitude when the focusing iris came under discussion was more than suspicious. He was almost certain now that she had absconded with the artifact herself and was intending to use it on her enemies as they had used it upon her. Reinforcing this unhappy conclusion was the fact that the focusing iris was once again hidden, even more expertly than it had been before. It was a bitter thought. He wanted to believe that the change he saw in this woman, for whom he cared so deeply, was due to the effect of the arcane energy of the bomb. But even if that was partially true, Kallik knew it could not explain everything. So it was that he was returning home, to the Nexus, to speak with his flight. And he realized he wanted to go home. He noticed as he approached that no one was wheeling protectively about the Nexus, as dragons had done from time immemorial. The sight saddened him further. He decided not to land immediately, but instead to speak with one who might have either balm for his soul or difficult words he would need to hear. He found Kirigosa at her pondering place, where he had been speaking with her when the news of the theft had first reached them. She did not seem surprised as she saw him approach. As before, she had opted for her human form, leaning against the shining tree, not feeling the cold, even though she wore a light, sleeveless blue dress. He landed on the hovering platform, transforming into his own bipedal form, and took the hand she extended to him as he sat beside her. They didn't speak for a long time. Finally, Kallik said,
"I saw no one patrolling."
Kirigosa nodded. "Most of them are gone now," she said. "Each day, someone decides that his or her home is no longer here." Kallik closed his eyes in pain.
"I feel like I've failed, Kiri," he said softly. "Failed at everything. Failed as a leader. Failed to recover the focusing iris. Failed Jaina. Failed to even realize how badly wounded she was by what happened to Theramore."
Her blue eyes held no hint of pleasure as she looked at him. "She has it, then?"
"I do not know. I can't really sense it anymore, not distinctly, but I think she might."
She knew what the words cost him and squeezed his hand. "For what it is worth, I do not think you were wrong to have loved her, or to love her still. Your heart is great, but it must also be wise."
"You know," he said, attempting to interject levity, "there are those who've said that you and I would be a good match. Prevent me from going after the wrong sorts of females."
Kiri did laugh at that, resting her head on his shoulder. "I do not deny that you'll make a fine mate for someone one day, Kallikos, but it is not me."
"And there goes my last hope of being a normal dragon."
"I am glad every day that you are not," she said, and his heart felt full with the affection in her eyes. He did love her, but not as a mate. He sighed, and the melancholy resettled upon him.
"Oh, Kiri, I have lost my way. I don't know what to do."
"I think you know exactly what to do, and you know your path," she said. "You stand at a crossroads, my dear friend. As do we all. Either the Blues need you to lead them well and wisely, or they need to be free to find their own paths, be the leaders of their own lives. Do we truly have a purpose, higher than our duties to ourselves? Perhaps the younger races, too, have the right to be the leaders of their own lives, make their own choices, and live with the consequences."
"As Garrosh did," Kallik thought. "As Jaina is preparing to do." "Changes," he murmured,
recalling what he had once said to Jaina.
"There is a rhythm, a cycle to such things. Nothing stays the same, Jaina. Not even dragons, so long-lived and supposedly so wise."
"Supposedly."
"Where will you go?" he asked quietly.
In those four words telling Kirigosa of his choice. "I have not explored the world as you have," she said. "I am told There are oceans that are warm, not filled with ice. Breezes that are sweetly scented, not brisk and chill. I think I should like to see those places. Find a different pondering place. There was no more need for words. She rose, as if she'd been waiting only to hear him release her. He too got to his feet, and they embraced tightly. "Farewell for now, dear Kallik," she said. "If you ever have need of me, search for me in tropical climes."
"And if you have need of me, go to the most unlikely place you can think of for a dragon to be. I'm sure I'll be there."
His chest ached as he watched her change, catch the wind beneath her wings, and soar upward, wheeling for a moment in farewell, and then heading south. A half hour later, Kallikko stood alone at the top of the Nexus. His old adversary-turned-friend, Taralagos, had been the last one to leave. He headed northeast. Unlike Kiragosa, the still peace of the cold lands, the traditional home of the Blues was what the elderly dragon craved. None of the other dragons had been surprised at his decision. None of them seemed to blame him. Change. It had come, and all the struggling and resistance in the world, all the protesting, all the wishing for things to be the way they used to be, it was all futile. Change would come. What would it do to him, the sole citizen of a now empty kingdom? Where did his path lie?
"All things change, Jaina, whether from the inside out or the outside in. Sometimes with only a single shift in a variable," he had once said to the woman he fell in love with.
"And we are magic, too," she had replied.
"Yes," he murmured, "we are."
And he knew what he had to do. Jaina had done what she could to disguise herself, and had traveled by the usual methods to Ratchet, rather than simply teleporting. Once there, she bought a griffin from a traveler who seemed down on his luck, and flew south. She fully realized that she was flying over the path the Horde had taken to march on Northwatch, and she let that bitter knowledge fuel her anger. When the ruins of Northwatch Hold, now occupied by the Horde, came into view, she had to choke back a lump in her throat. The sight of the red and black banners of the Horde soldiers left behind to guard, while the rest of the ships formed the blockade, turned the pain cold. She brought the griffin to the earth and dismounted, taking care to hold the small pouch she always carried close to her. She then gave the griffin a smart smack on his leonine rump. He flapped upward in irritation, and Jaina nodded. He would soon find his way back to Ratchet, and a new rider, who'd be very pleased at having him. Jaina had no further need of the beast. She turned to the east and murmured a teleportation spell. A few seconds later, Jaina arrived on Frey Island.
"Hey there, missy," said a rough voice.
The human addressing her had cut off breeches, an open shirt, and a cutlass.
"Come to play with the pirates, have you?"
She turned her glowing white eyes to him. "I've no time for this," she said. Almost absently, she directed a fireball at the thug. He screamed as his whole body caught fire, stumbled a few feet, and then fell, writhing. Jaina was unmoved by the sight, turning her attention to the fellow's comrades as they rushed up, shouting angrily. They were not Horde, not all of them, but they were cutthroats and murderers and deserved no one to mourn them. Ruthlessly, Jaina marched through the encampment, blasting her would-be killers with fire, ice, and arcane energy. She slew humans and trolls, dwarves and an ogre, who looked ridiculous with a tiny hat perched on his bald pate. She scoured the buildings clean, so that she would have no distractions. Jaina turned toward the north. Her hand slipped down into the pouch and held the focusing iris, perfectly miniaturized, thanks to information gleaned from perusal of the tome she had stolen from the Dalaran library, and began to make her plans. The earthen ring was exhausted. The elements seemed angrier today than usual, and while no one spoke the words aloud, Thrall was certain that he was not the only one to wonder if their efforts were starting to have less effect. It did not make any sense. Progress had been very slow, it was true, but it had been measurable and consistent. The weary shaman retreated back to their encampment, in need of food and rest. Maln Earthfury, as the former leader of the Earthen Ring, seemed to be the most affected. Agra watched the Tauren, frowning a little.
"The silence troubles me," she said. "We all think the same thing, but no one speaks it. Come, let us talk to Maln."
Thrall smiled and shook his head.
"We think along the same lines, my heart, but always you press for action first."
She shrugged.
"Growing up in the Grand will teach you to act quickly when you see trouble," she said, squeezing his hand as they walked.
Maln looked over at the two orcs and sighed.
"I already know what you are going to say," he said. "And I do not know the answer as to why we seem to be backsliding. The elements are so distressed, and have been for so long, it is hard to hear them clearly anymore."
Thrall said,
"Perhaps we should."
Pain shot through him, and he fell to his knees, clutching his skull. Agra dropped beside him, hands on his shoulders.
"Gowell, what is it?" she cried.
His lips moved, but nothing came out. Agra's face faded away. Thrall saw nothing for a moment, and then, suddenly, he saw too much. Water, blue-green and cold and angry, crashed over him. He choked, gasped, struggled to breathe. It lifted him up and then thrust him under, tossed and turned him. It was a great wave, and yet Thrall saw, here and there, small, furious eyes, the shape of an arm, a head, the glitter of a manacle. This was more than a simple ocean wave. Thrall was at the mercy of enslaved elementals. He was not alone. There were dozens, hundreds of orcs caught up in the wave as well, all struggling to survive. Debris, too, was a danger in addition to the water itself. A hand made of seawater pushed Thrall downward, and he saw below him the roofs of Orgrimmar. How was that possible? But he could see the gate, the debris of the iron scaffolding that he had heard Garrosh had erected.
"Help us," voices whispered.
Thrall couldn't breathe. He felt water filling his lungs.
"Help us. This is not what we wish to do."
He felt the watery hand holding him down tremble, as if it was struggling itself against something, and then release. Thrall shot to the surface, coughing and gasping in clean air.
"Stop this, or else your people will die while we slay them and grieve, and we will live forever in servitude."
Thrall gathered his wits and, still coughing, asked,
"Where?"
No words filled his mind, but there was an image. A chunk of land off the coast of the Northern Barrens. It was a long way from Orgrimmar, but what did the point of origin matter to the ocean, which touched all shorelines?
"Gowell," said the beloved voice, calling him back to the present. "Gowell!"
The horrifying image of drowned corpses and a ruined city faded. Thrall blinked, feeling a surge of relief at seeing Agra's face instead of the vision, for such it had to be. She smiled and stroked his cheek.
"What did you see, my friend?" asked Maln.
Others had gathered around now. Thrall struggled to rise, but Maln pushed him down.
"Rest and speak, then rise and eat."
Thrall nodded.
"You were right, of course, Maln," he said. "The elements granted me a vision. This may explain why they have grown so suddenly distressed."
Quickly, succinctly, but leaving out no important detail, Thrall recounted what he had seen.
"Do you know the island?" asked Nobundo. "I do," he said. "It is Frey Island, located due south of Durotar."
The shaman exchanged glances.
"If the elements cry out so poignantly for aid, we must answer," said Mon.
But Nobundo shook his head.
"No," he said. "If they wished aid from us all, we would all have had the vision. They know we cannot leave here. But they did call for help."
Thrall nodded slowly. Agra looked pained, but resigned.
"They spoke to me," he said. "And me alone. So it is I who must answer their cry and stop the slaughter of my people. Agra, beloved, you know I would have you with me, but..."
She smiled around her tusks. "The task is yours, Goel," she said. "And I will strike anyone who dares say in my presence you are not up to it." He smiled wanly. Up to it, indeed. Up to freeing hundreds of enslaved water elementals so that they did not eradicate an entire city? He hoped so. The elements were wise. He would trust them. Thrall got to his feet, embraced his mate, then headed to his small tent to pack what little he would need for the journey. Fulgen had had enough. When word of the accident at Razor Hill Inn had reached him, he had seen it as a sign. He would risk no more accidents to his people. Long had he liked and trusted Thrall, and when that orc had urged him to stay with the Horde, he had agreed. Caution also had seemed to dictate such a choice, despite the insult Garrosh had offered him by forcing his people to live in the slums. Now the trolls were on the Echo Isles, and so too close for comfort. But perhaps it was time for a withdrawal. Or at least, time to plan for one. Garrosh and the loyal Horde, the ones who drank in taverns in Orgrimmar, as opposed to Razor Hill, were still in the throes of self-congratulation for their despicable actions. The Korkron, or at least that filth Malkorok, had made it very clear that they were so convinced of ultimate victory that they were willing to eliminate those Horde members who dared speak against Garrosh in private, and, presumably, public. Under Thrall, the Horde had been good to the trolls. But now, Vol'jin had lost many fine soldiers in the last two battles. And this was how he was repaid? No. Time to go home, at least for now, since home was so close. Time to sink deep into meditation and see what the Loa had to say. He recalled his words to Garrosh from some time ago, that the orc would spend his reign glancing over his shoulder, and that in his last moments, the war chief would know exactly who had killed him. It seemed that the decision was the right one. Even before he reached the Echo Isles, he was met by a canoe. The shaman in the stern had his arms raised, and the water directly beneath the boat was moving faster than it should have. He was using the elements to bear him to his leader as swiftly as possible. Vol'jin didn't even wait until the other boat pulled alongside him. Asking the Loa to help him make his voice carry, he cried,
"What is it, Mon? What be wrong?"
The shaman answered, his voice borne to Vol'jin's long ears on the anxious wind.
"Alliance! De coming! A whole lot of them!"
Garrosh roared in anger and threw his mug across the table.
"Alliance! Here! Our intelligence said they were gathering at Dark Shore."
The hapless troll, whose job had been to inform the war chief, flinched slightly, although the mug had not been hurled in his direction.
"I don't know about that, war chief, but they should be closing in on Bladefist Bay. There be dozens of ships. What you want us to do?"
Garrosh recovered from his outburst almost immediately.
"Tell Bane to send druids to every port that we are blockading. Our fleet needs to redirect immediately.
And Northwatch, order them here, every last ship. Now!
And then, to the confusion of the troll messenger, a crafty smile crossed Girosh's face.
And all the Magi, bring them to me. The plan I have can work as well in Bladefist Bay as in Darkshore.
Varian stood on the deck of the Lion of the Waves as they approached Kalimdor. The Draenei Shaman had been doing a stellar job of imploring the wind and the waves for aid, and the fleet had crossed the ocean in record time, with fair winds and calm seas. They were now but a few miles off the coast of Bladefist Bay. Varian was the leader of the Alliance forces, but not the captain of the Lion of the Waves, and took care to let Telda Stonefist do her job. Indeed, it was an easy task. Telda knew what she was doing, and for all her small stature, every sailor jumped when she barked an order. Now, as Varian strode to stand beside her, the spray from the wind dampening both their hair, she handed him a spyglass.
"There is your first glimpse of the bay," she said.
Varian placed the instrument to his right eye. There was only one ship at the dock, though he knew the path through to Orgrimmar would be hard-fought.
"Looks as if the single ship in the harbor is of goblin construction."
"Which means that one good shot should blow the whole thing sky-high,"
Telda grinned. Varian felt a tingle of unease. It was a remnant of Logosh, a heightening of all the senses, including those that went beyond the usual five. He turned to face into the briskly blowing wind, sniffing, and lifted the spyglass again to his eye. Only sea and sky, different shades of blue. Slowly, he turned in every direction. Blue sea, blue sky. Something that was not blue, a small speck on the horizon.
"There!" Varian cried, pointing to the south. "Ships!"
Somehow, Garrosh had anticipated him.
"All hands! Battle stations!" shouted Telda,
in a voice that seemed far too loud to have issued from such a short frame. Everyone jumped into action. Swiftly, the well-trained marines leaped to the cannons. Magi climbed the rigging, the better to aim the devastating fireballs that wreaked such havoc on wooden sailing vessels. And the shaman rushed to the sides of the ship, more than any others putting themselves in harm's way, to urge the elements to assist them by showing they were willing to risk themselves as well. The horns were sounded, and one by one, the ships that had been sailing due east swung about, ready to face the threat from the south. Varian scrambled up the rigging himself, holding on with one hand, while bringing the spyglass to his eye. There were several ships sailing steadily toward them, but the horde was wildly outmatched. Varian nodded. He didn't know how Garrosh had expected them. Perhaps a deep-sea fishing vessel had spotted the armada and hastened back to sound the alarm, but it didn't matter now. All that mattered was that the horde had indeed focused on the blockade, and it was throwing all it had at the Alliance. Which was not much.
"Jaina," he murmured, quickly lowering himself to the deck. "You were right about one thing, at least. Perhaps we can end this here and now."
At first, there was almost a giddy atmosphere. It was clear that the Horde had fallen for the disinformation spread by the Alliance spies, and that its navy was busily engaged in guarding shores that would not come under attack. The few ships from Northwatch Hold were little more than practice targets. Bladefist Bay, still and quiet and almost bored, now erupted into an ocean battlefield. Heedless of his own safety, Varian climbed the rigging again and peered over the ocean. He could see a mere 3 or 4 ships struggling in his direction as fast as they could. Their sails, too, billowed with wind. The Horde had had Shaman far longer than the Alliance had, and no doubt was demanding all they could give.
"Hard about port!" Telda shouted.
Varian tightened his grip on the wet ropes, as the ship swung hard to the left, turning to face the threat from the south. For a moment, he almost felt sorry for the crews and the ships the Alliance were about to blow out of the water.
Fire!
The Lion of the Waves was rattled by the sound of all its cannons exploding, disgorging their contents upon the enemy. Some cannonballs splashed harmlessly into the water, but most struck their target, the lead ship, dead on. Cheers went up as the side of the Horde vessel was nearly completely caved in. And then the wood began mending itself. It would seem that in addition to experienced shaman, the crew of this ship also had skillful druids. Varian swore, climbed down swiftly, and dropped the rest of the way.
"Warlocks, at the ready!" he shouted.
It was always uneasy when those who worked with demons were pressed into service for the good of the Alliance, but they had certain spells, and certain creatures in thrall, whose efficacy was undeniable. They hurried to the sides, their black and purple and other dark-hued robes flowing about them, and summoned their minions. As one, they lifted their arms and began to chant their ugly-sounding spells. Fire rained down, steady and pervasive, on the already damaged ship. Small, cackling demons known as imps were sent to dance upon the enemy vessel, throwing fire hither and thither. The fact that they seemed to enjoy the destruction they wrought was an added bonus.
"Magi!"
cried Varian, his eyes fastened on the Horde ship. Enormous fireballs joined the steady, deadly rain of flame. The cannons roared again, and the enemy vessel could take no more. It cracked in two, and Varian saw, with satisfaction, many Horde soldiers leaping frantically into the waters of the bay. Still more were going down with the ship. The Lion of the Waves, victorious, swung slowly around. The shaman redirected the wind, and the ship bore down on its next target.
"One down, three to go," crowed Talda. "Come on, lads and lassies, we'll be supping in Orgrimmar by sunset."
And that was when a grey cloak fell over the ship. Varian swore. This was shamanic doing. But already the warlocks were reacting, sending their glowing green orbs beyond the reach of the conjured fog, and reporting back. One of them, a human woman, seemingly too young for the shining white hair that draped over her shoulders, called to Varian.
"Majesty, they are doing something in the ocean. It's churning fiercely. I can't quite make out what's going on."
More cannon fire. But this time, Varian didn't know which ships were doing the firing and which were being fired upon. And then there came a dreadful cracking sound. Not the sound of ships buckling under cannon fire, but something new and horrible that was out there but unseen. And suddenly, Varian understood that even though the Horde was vastly outnumbered, its forces were much more dangerous than he had anticipated. Chapter 25. It took time, more time than Jaina wanted to spend, but she needed to be thorough. Antonidas had taught her that. If you rushed through the studying of spells, or their execution, you risked results where nothing happened, at best, or at worst, disaster.
"It's every bit as dangerous as going into battle with a type of weapon you've never handled before," he had said, cautioning her.
So she sat on one of the small hills on Frey Island and reread everything the stolen tome could tell her about the focusing iris. She thought about what Kallik had shown her of magic, how it was logical and precise, and about what the book claimed, that arcane energy was so similar to an element, it might as well be one, for all magical intents and purposes. As she read, Jaina would absently reach out to stroke the surface of the focusing iris, cool even in the hot sun. She'd already performed some experiments with the item, and successfully. Its new, smaller size was testament to that. She restored it to its proper size and began other tests. She slept little and ate only conjured food. After 2 days of reining in her impatience, heartened by her success here, Jaina finally felt she was ready. She watched with narrowed eyes as the Horde sent most of its vessels from Northwatch Hold. Jaina expected they were going to Orgrimmar. The thought gave her pleasure. Yes, go home, she thought. She turned to face the ocean. The salty breeze stirred her white hair. Jaina centered herself, placing her hands on the focusing iris. If she understood correctly how the thing worked, it was a conduit, and, in the right hands, a magnifier of arcane energy. She felt it tingling coldly. Then, suddenly, a slender crack ran along its surface. And, like an eye, it started to open. Jaina gasped, but did not break contact. As long as she was directing the flow of magic, it would obey her. There was a searing flash, and a beam of light shot outward from the focusing iris to the ocean. With one hand on the iris still, Jaina lifted the other and made the familiar motions of a certain spell. Before, this spell had created a single elemental. Now, so quickly, there were 10. 10 shimmering, imprisoned water elementals, standing on the surface of the sea, their eyes glinting, what served for their arms encased in manacles. Jaina laughed. Then she made more. And more still, until there was scarcely any unenchanted water to be seen. Ordinarily, such work would be beyond her, and if it were not, she would be quivering with exhaustion by this point. Instead, she felt as strong as when she had begun. The focusing iris did all the work for her. No wonder the Horde had coveted it, and no wonder Kallak had been so worried when it had been stolen. For a brief moment, Jaina's concentration was elsewhere. The image of the blue dragon, beautiful to her in both his forms, appeared in her mind. She recalled his kindness, his laughter, how her heart had skipped a beat when he kissed her hand. But it was only a moment. Grimly, Jaina brought her attention back to the water elementals. There was no place for laughter and kindness in her world now. Not while a single orc yet breathed. With little more than a thought and a twitch of her fingers, she reformed those few elementals that had begun to lose cohesion due to her inattention. Now, to begin the binding. She had no spell for such a thing. To the best of her knowledge, it did not exist. But the focusing iris appeared not to be limited by such trivialities. Jaina concentrated hard on her intention, weaving her fingers in ways that came naturally to her. And the focusing iris and the elementals obeyed. They began to fuse together, thousands of them, not quite losing their shapes, but adapting to become part of a single greater form. Jaina smiled. Her heart racing as she beheld her success, she wove them together even more. What had once been thousands of individual elementals dancing on the top of the ocean was now a single wave, a tidal wave. Higher it grew and broader. Moving her hand in an upward gesture, Jaina caused the wave to rise. In the vast wall of water, she could still see individual eyes and enchanted manacles on watery arms. But they would not separate. Not while she bid them to stay together. She took her time. It was no small distance from here to the tidal wave's ultimate destination. Jaina would need many elementals and would have to keep masterful control if she was to be successful. Finally, she was almost ready. A few more to gather up, another 10, perhaps 20 feet higher.
"Jaina!" said a voice.
Deep and rich, and laced both with joy and pain. The wave faltered as Jaina turned, keeping one hand still firmly on the focusing iris.
Thrall, Jaina shouted back. She deliberately did not use his true name.
What are you doing here?
The pleasure on his face faded.
I am so glad you live, my old friend. But I was called here to stop you.
Old friend, he called her. That was what they were, wasn't it? Friends who had worked side by side to stop wars, to save lives, both Horde and Alliance. But they could be friends no longer. The Doomhammer remained strapped across his back as he strode toward her, his arms outstretched imploringly.
I had a vision of a tsunami unleashed on Orgrimmar. A tsunami that had its origins here. And so I came, as the elements begged me to stop this from occurring. In all my dreams and fears, I never thought to find you alive. And behind this horrible disaster about to happen... Please, Jaina, release them. Let them go.
I can't, she said, and her voice cracked. I have to do this, Thrall.
I have heard about what happened to Theramore, Thrall said,
still slowly approaching her.
I grieve with you at so many deaths in so brutal a fashion. But doing to Orgrimmar what the Horde did to Theramore, it won't bring anyone back, Jaina. All it will do is take more innocent lives.
You grieve, she snarled. Theramore's destruction I lay firmly at your feet, Thrall. You left Garrosh in charge of the Horde. I begged you to come back, to remove him from power. I knew he would do something terrible one day, and he has. Garrosh may have done this, but I blame you for giving him the power to do it.
Thrall stopped dead in his tracks, shocked by her words.
Then, blame me, Jaina. Ancestors know I blame myself. But do not seek to buy vengeance for the fallen of Theramore by killing my people.
People, Jaina echoed. I can't even call them that anymore. They're not people. They are monsters. And so are you. My father was right. It took an entire city of people slaughtered before I could see it. I was blind to what the orcs were because of you. You tricked me into believing that there could be peace, that the orcs weren't bloodthirsty animals. But you lied. This is war, Thrall, and war hurts. War is ugly. But you started it. Your Horde obliterated Theramore and is now blockading the Alliance cities in Kalimdor. Whole populations are being held hostage, are being attacked. Well, as we stand here, Varian is leading the fight to break that blockade. And when I've completed my task, I'll help him. And then we'll see who holds whom hostage. But first, I destroy the city named for Orgrim Doomhammer in the land named for your father.
Jaina, no, please don't.
With a smirk and a simple flick of her wrist, Jaina released the tidal wave. A terrible sound, the cry of hundreds of enslaved elementals, shattered the air as the wave surged north.
No!
cried Thrall. He shot out his arms desperately, pleading silently.
Spirit of air, hold them still. Do not let them be used to slay so many innocents.
He reached in his pouch and touched the small carvings that represented the elements. Their essences manifested in glowing, pulsing images of these figurines. Such a totem appeared at his feet as air came willingly to his call, and the wind that suddenly sprang up wrapped itself around the writhing wave, attempting to restrain the tsunami. Jaina growled and gestured. The elementals wailed in agony as they were forced to fight against the binding of the wind. Thrall grunted and found himself trembling with the strain. Jaina was a powerful mage, but she shouldn't have been strong enough to stand against him, especially not when it was the will of the elements themselves to resist her. Thrall had never seen the focusing iris, but he knew what it looked like. it had directed powerful surge needles that pulled arcane magic from Azeroth's ley lines to the Nexus. It had given life to a five-headed chromatic dragon. Now, it was under the direction of a master mage. Thrall sickly realized he'd gotten things backward. The wonder lay not in the fact that Jaina was stronger than he was now. The wonder lay in the fact that he was able to resist her at all.
"Jaina," he said,
the words coming out through teeth clenched with his body's strain.
"Your pain is justified. What was done was an atrocity. But the life breath of children should not be demanded for what Garrosh did."
Her white head with a single gold lock turned to him. Her eerie eyes stared at him coldly. She splayed her fingers and shoved her hand forward. Thrall flew backward, slammed hard by something lavender white and glowing. His world went gray for a second, and he landed on his back on the sand, gasping for breath. His whole body shuddered, but he forced himself to rise and direct his energy toward holding back the tidal wave. The attack had not been intended to loosen his hold over the elements. The attack had been meant to kill. Thrall could not bring himself to do that. Not yet. Not to Jaina, who had once been and might yet be a cherished friend. And thus he was handicapped in a way she was not. Thrall asked the spirit of air for aid again. A gust of wind, raging at near hurricane levels, blasted Jaina so fiercely that the mage stumbled backward, toppling to the sand. Her hand was torn from the focusing iris, and the whirling air snatched the words of command from her mouth. Thrall used the precious seconds to direct his full attention to the towering wall of water.
"Spirit of water, struggle against the spell that enslaves you. Take my strength. Use it to..."
He heard and felt the heat behind him. Lamenting the need, he redirected his imploring from the spirits of water to a spirit of fire. Thrall whirled, his hands up, to do what he could to protect himself from the massive fireball hurtling toward him. The spirit of fire was angry and tortured, and for a moment, Thrall feared it would not hear him in time. Defensively, he threw up three orbs of water that circled swiftly around him and granted him energy. Thrall could not help but close his eyes as he braced for the searing heat and pain. At the last second, the huge swirling ball seemed to fracture, flames going off in all directions. Only a very few struck the shaman, but those singed his robes and flesh painfully.
"I won't let you stop me," Jaina shouted.
She was on her hands and knees, crawling toward the focusing iris. Before he could react and disperse the groaning, straining elementals that composed the tidal wave, the mage slammed one hand down on the artifact, strengthening her spell. With the other, she twisted her fingers commandingly. Thrall was stunned as the two remaining globes of water were yanked from their protective orbit around him. They grew larger, magical bonds appearing on suddenly sprouted arms, and then went to join their kindred, serving Jaina now. He realized that the artifact not only gave her own spells more power, it gave her power over his as well.
"Do you see, Thrall? Do you understand what you are up against?" "I see, Jaina," Thrall shouted back.
He reinforced his totems and focused on keeping the tidal wave from being released. If only his words could reach her.
"I see that you are broken and grieving. Don't let what Garrosh did to Theramore claim you as a victim, too. I can help you." "Help me? Maybe you are helping Garrosh. How do I know that you aren't working with him? Maybe this has been your plan all along."
So shocked was Thrall by the accusation that his spell faltered. The enormous tower of churning water elementals surged forward several yards. Thrall barely regained control of it by devoting his whole will to the task.
A huge pillar of fire suddenly appeared, whirling furiously and churning up sand as it bore down on Thrall. This he knew he could not dissipate, and nearly all his energy was being spent in holding back the crashing wave. The wave.
"Spirits of water, let me walk upon you and embrace me."
He turned and raced from the sand onto the surface of the water, running as swiftly as if upon dry land. The orc